It's time again for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show covering fishing, hunting, and all sorts of outdoor recreation and destinations right here in the region you live and play in. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you every week by Max Lure Company, makers of the world-famous wedding ring spinner, by Loophole, America's optics authority, and by Sportsman's Warehouse, America's premier outfitter. Northwestern Outdoors is also sponsored by Wallowa County in Northeast Oregon, where you'll find both nature and fun, by Chad's Coast White Sports Fishing, offering you the affordable Canadian fishing trip of a lifetime, and by Camp Chef, the way to cook outdoors. So grab your fishing rod or hunting gear, load up the boat or lace up your boots, and let's head outdoors with your host, John Cruz.
Spring hiking. Well, you know, the mountains are still full of snow, but there is one place to go that is sunny, warm, and in bloom this month, making it the perfect place for a hike. Where is this place, you ask? You'll find it in the deserts of the Inland Northwest. The desert may not be a fun place to hike in the summer months, but it is the perfect place to go right now. You can smell the aromatic sagebrush, and in many places see blooming yellow arrowleaf balsam root and pink phlox. Better still, wildlife is out and about after a long winter, so bring your camera and binoculars to view everything from birds to bucks to bighorn sheep, and don't forget your fishing pole either, because there is some fine, and I mean fine, fishing to be had at lakes in these areas. One of my favorite places to do all of this is at the Columbia National Wildlife Refuge near Othello, Washington. There are a number of drive-to and hike-in lakes there that open up for fishing on April 1st. There are plenty of other lakes out there as well, so get out a map and plan yourself a desert foray this month. You won't regret it. This week on the show, we'll kick things off talking to Pat Doyle. He's the communications director for Montana State Parks, and he's got some suggestions about parks offering some great outdoor recreation you simply have to visit. After we talk to Pat, we'll check in with Roger Phillips with Idaho Fish and Game. There's all sorts of news about fish and wildlife coming out of the Gem State right now, and Roger's going to give you a roundup covering a good portion of it. From Idaho, we'll travel to Wyoming. That's where Tom Christensen, a state game biologist, has got information about viewing sage grouse this month. Where do you go see them? It's something called a lek. What the heck is a lek, you ask? We'll explain exactly what it is later in the show. On top of all this, we'll check in with Lance Mers during an extended Max Minute about the lure you'll want to use if you're looking to hook into a trophy walleye out of the Columbia River this month. And, as usual, we've got some upcoming events to tell you about, along with our Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week, where you get the chance to win the $25 gift card we give away every week from America's Premier Outfitter. But before we get into a show full of the outdoors in the Inland Northwest, we have the pleasure of bringing you Sportsman Spotlight, hosted this week by our old friend and longtime host of this program, David Sparks. This week, David shares a remarkable new invention for backpackers out of Boise, Idaho, called the Pack-a-Pull. Sportsman Spotlight is sponsored every week by Chad's Coastwide Sports Fishing, offering affordable, all-inclusive saltwater fishing vacations out of Port Hardy for salmon, halibut, lingcod, rockfish, and more. Find out more at coastwidesportsfishing.com.
Pulley system that could be very useful for hunters and hikers. David Sparks with Sportsman Spotlight. I received the following email from a gentleman named Roy Chitwood from Boise. It says, "Hi, David. I've just recently learned about Sportsman Spotlight and love it." Thank you, sir. "I want to share my new product launch with you that I have on Kickstarter, which is crowdfunding. Pack-a-Pull is a pulley system specifically designed with backpackers and backpack hunters in mind. Please take a look and let me know what you think. Please share and or include on your show if appropriate." He included a little video, and here are some snippets of information.
This is an ultra-lightweight, packable pulley system that I call Pack-a-Pull. The Pack-a-Pull only weighs 4 ounces and fits in the palm of your hand. Pack-a-Pull is ideal for backpacking enthusiasts and big game hunters, campers, all the above, that need to hang fairly heavy items in a tree to keep their prized possessions safe from bears and other critters. Using two pulleys per load provides a 2-to-1 mechanical advantage, which makes your items much easier to lift. Besides being ultra small and lightweight, what really sets this pulley system apart from the others is how two loads can be lifted, hung, and lowered completely independent from each other. The 2-to-1 mechanical advantage and splitting the load into two separate loads enables one person to hang heavy items several feet in the air.
If this sounds of interest to you, you can email him at rechitwood@icloud.com. Find Sportsman Spotlight at aginfo.net.
A quality and affordable fishing adventure is waiting for you off Vancouver Island with Chad's Coastwide Sports Fishing. Located in Port Hardy, British Columbia, you can drive or fly to your all-inclusive guided fishing vacation. Whether you're after big salmon, heart-fighting halibut, or a cooler full of red snapper and ling cod, you can catch it all here. Better yet, your lodging, meals, and fish processing are all taken care of. Want one more reason to go? The price. With the Canadian dollar exchange rate where it is right now, your U.S. dollar goes further. Space is limited, so go to coastwidesportsfishing.com to book your trip. That's coastwidesportsfishing.com for an incredible BC fishing adventure.
Want to go fishing and make money? You are in luck. This year's Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery kicks off May 1st. Just register at a check station and go fishing for 9-inch or longer northern pike minnow within designated waters of the Columbia or Snake River. Then you bring your fish back and collect a voucher good for a cash reward. The more fish you catch, the more they're worth. $5, $6, and $8 per fish. Catch a pike minnow with a special tag and you've landed $500. Find out more at pikeminnow.org. That's pikeminnow.org.
This is the time of year to get out and cook out. So make your next meal sizzle with Camp Chef, the brand known for quality outdoor cooking equipment. To eat like a king on your next adventure, go to CampChef.com or visit your local sporting goods store and get cooking. Camp Chef, the way to cook outdoors.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. For our next segment, we are taking you to Montana. That's right. A lot of folks love to recreate in Montana, especially during the summer months. There are millions, literally millions of people heading to Glacier National Park and Yellowstone National Park, but they're missing out on some of the great state parks and some of the great outdoors fun you can have at those places. With us here to tell us more about Montana state parks and why you should visit them is Pat Doyle. He's the communications manager for that organization. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John.
So, Pat, let's put this in perspective. I know that Glacier National Park had record visitation last year with several million people. Yellowstone National Park is always one of the most visited national parks in the state. How do your state parks compare? Do you get a lot of spillover in terms of visitation, or do your state parks kind of run under the radar?
You know, we do get a lot of visitation. Our visitation actually since 2011 is up 42%, which is shocking to a lot of people. We do have a large park system in Montana, so we have 55 parks, which are really spread out around the state. But when you're talking about, you know, the visitation that Glacier and Yellowstone get, we are on par with those parks. Our park system got 2.7 million visits in 2016, which is a new record for us.
Wow.
Some of that, yes, absolutely, yes. Some of that is spillover from Glacier and Yellowstone, but the majority of it is people that are looking for destinations that are a little bit more off the beaten path. We do have seven national historic landmarks in our park system, which is more than any other park system manages west of the Mississippi. And so we do have a lot of properties that are not only of state significance, but of also national significance as well, historical significance. So we kind of say that our parks tell the story of Montana. And a lot of our parks actually kind of tell the story of the West and have some real significance nationwide. And yeah, we offer kind of something for everybody.
I think it's fantastic. You know what's really interesting to me, Pat, is I've been lucky enough to go to a number of state parks in Montana, and I've never felt crowded at those state parks. Well, maybe with one exception, which I think we're going to get into in a minute. But by and large, you know, just like they call Montana Big Sky Country, there's a lot of space to be had at your state parks and a lot to see. Let's talk about some can't-miss state parks to visit in Montana, particularly in the western and central part of Montana. If there was a place, we'll say in northwest Montana, you'd send folks to this spring and summer, where would it be?
I would send those folks to Flathead Lake State Park. You know, for those of you who don't know Flathead Lake, it's the largest freshwater lake west of the Mississippi. It's absolutely gorgeous. A lot of people compare it to what Lake Tahoe was maybe 30 or 40 years ago. It's kind of this undiscovered gem of kind of that corner of the state for a lot of people that aren't familiar with it. And with Flathead Lake, we are lucky enough to control state parks, to control and manage the majority of the public access points on that lake through our parks. So on the east shore of Flathead Lake, for example, we have three parks that all offer camping, RV hookups, smaller trail systems, shoreline, boat launches, things like that. On the west side, we have two other large parks as well that offer the same amenities. And we do actually own an island in the lake as well called Wild Horse Island State Park. It's a primitive park. You can't camp there. It's a day use only park. It does have a very extensive trail system. And just for kind of context, the island is over 2,000 acres.
Wow.
So it's really incredible. Abundance of wildlife. There is wild horses on the island, bighorn sheep. So, yeah, if you can get there, it is a very unique experience. It is the largest island in a lake in the West. So, yeah, if you got a boat, I would encourage you to go out. It's a great place to spend the day, hike, enjoy some solitude.
Oh, sounds fantastic. And folks, having been to Flathead Lake myself, it is gorgeous out there. Two things you need to do. Number one, go kayaking if you can. It's a wonderful place for that sport. And bring your fishing pole because it is one of the best Mackinac trout fisheries in the United States. And there's even a, well, for lack of a better word, a sport reward fishery. There's actually derbies that take place in the spring and the fall where you can earn money for catching Mackinac trout. Just another reason to head there. Let's go ahead and head towards central Montana. Talk about a place where people might want to visit there.
Yeah, in central Montana, we have a really unique spot called First Steeples Buffalo Jump State Park. And for people who aren't familiar with what a buffalo jump is, it is when native tribes used to herd herds of buffalo off of a cliff as a way to basically kill them. And so First Steeples Buffalo Jump is one of the largest buffalo jumps in North America. It was used by over 13 tribes in the area, so super significant to a lot of different tribes and a really great spot. First Steeples Buffalo Jump is a National Historic Landmark. Like I said, we manage seven of them. It has an extensive visitor center and trail system where you can actually walk or drive up to the top of the jump to get a perspective of what these native tribes and basically how they use the jump. There's teepee rings at the top that are left over and drive lines that are left over from actually where tribes would drive with their horses, buffalo over the jump. So a very cool place to spend a day. This park is a day use only park, but we have a lot of interpretive events throughout the summer that are extremely interesting. Montana State Parks is a large AmeriCorps program, and this is a place where we do have AmeriCorps people on site that are certified interpretive guides that can walk you through a ton of history in the area. Also, First Steeples Buffalo Jump is really conveniently located, since there is no camping, very conveniently located to Great Falls, about 15 miles away. So you're close to an urban center, and it's a great place to spend a day. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And like you mentioned when we were talking earlier, this park does a wonderful job of bringing history to life. The visitor center is a can't miss. Make sure you go there first. If you sit through one of the programs, do that. And then go on the hike or drive up to the buffalo jump. And by the way, bring your camera because you're going to see a whole bunch of ground squirrels or prairie dogs up there that are going to be peeking out at you. They are popular up there, aren't they?
They are popular. And, you know, for prairie dogs are one of those things that for people that have never seen them before, it's a real treat. So yeah, they're kind of a very unique animal to the West, and people get a kick out of them.
Pat, we're running short on time, but we can't leave without talking about what I think is the coolest state park that you have, Lewis and Clark Cavern State Park. Tell our listeners in about a minute about that experience.
Yeah, well, Lewis and Clark Cavern State Park is a large cave essentially that we offer daily tours of. The tours range from about an hour to 2 hours. We actually go a mile uphill in the cave. Very, very cool. Cave tours, like I said, are almost every hour. We do in the summer have wild cave tours, which are more of a cave spelunking, which is another really cool thing. Those are reservation only on Sunday and Tuesday nights in the summer. So those kind of off the beaten path tour. And Lewis and Clark Cavern State Park, again, offers a wide variety of camping, cabin rentals, teepee rentals. There is also a 10-mile trail system at the park. The park itself is over 3,000 acres, so tons of mountain biking and hiking opportunities in a gorgeous setting along the Jefferson River in southwest Montana.
That's right. And don't forget to bring your fly rod, because the Jefferson River is known as a pretty good stream for trout fishing. And again, folks, I've been to a lot of places where you can explore caves. I think Lewis and Clark Caverns is probably my favorite. It's a very intimate experience, and the guides there do a great job. We've got to go, but let's give folks a website where they can find out more about Montana State Parks and planning a visit this summer.
For more information, please visit stateparks.mt.gov.
That's stateparks.mt.gov. That's stateparks.mt.gov. Plan your Montana State Parks vacation right now. Pat, thanks for telling us all about this on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Have a great day.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has the quality gear you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff will help you find the right product so you get the most out of your time in the field or on the water. In addition to stocking superior clothing and outdoor equipment, we offer in-store events and seminars so you can enjoy a successful adventure. With over 70 stores located in the United States, it's easy to find a Sportsman's Warehouse store near you. Find out more at sportsmanswarehouse.com.
From the Columbia River to Puget Sound, the Coastal Conservation Association in the Pacific Northwest works to conserve the fish we love and does so while protecting our heritage of sport fishing. To find out more, go to ccapnw.org. Again, that's ccapnw.org.
You're back with more of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
It's time for another Max Minute.
Fish on!
Brought to you every week by Max Lure Company. With us again is Lance Mers. Lance, this is the time of year where anglers are down on the Mid-Columbia River from the Tri-Cities down to Umatilla and Boardman, and they are looking for those huge walleye. As a matter of fact, a lot of folks think the next world record is going to come out of this stretch of the Columbia. If you were down there and you were looking for that world record, what's the lure you would use to hook into them?
Well, John, a lot of people are jigging right now, but if I want to go down to the bottom and meet some of those fish, I'm going to use a Max Lure Smile Blade Super Slow Death Rig. And the cool thing I like about it is there's an extended bend in the hook, which really creates spin and attraction when you put a nightcrawler on that hook.
All right, so the Smile Blade Super Slow Death Rig, it's got the patented Smile Blade up top that spins at ultra slow speeds, which is really important during these cold water times of year when you're going to be trolling at a very slow speed. It's got the tapered beads down to that slow death hook, and it's a great combination. Let's talk about colors. What kind of colors do you like to use at this time of year on the Columbia?
Well, the first thing you want to do is catch that first walleye and open up its belly to figure out what they're eating it on. Match the hatch as much as possible as you can. And we've done that with the super slow death rigs. We've matched the hatch and we've made those colors. And they come in 8 different colors, anywhere from a perch pattern to a bass to a crawdad. You name it, the sky's the limit. Just find the hatch and match that hatch.
All right, so whether you are fishing for a potential world record on the Columbia or at any other body of water for walleye, consider the Smile Blade Super Slow Death Rig. You'll find it at sporting goods stores near you or online at maxlure.com.
I'm Bob Loomis, and I fish for walleye. Sometimes when I'm out on the water, I feel like a destroyer captain hunting for targets with my electronics. I'm not hunting submarines, though. I'm hunting fish. And when I find that big one on the fish finder, I want to make sure she's going to bite. That's where the Smile Blade Slow Death Rig from Max Lure comes in. The Smile Blade spins and flashes at ultra-slow speeds, and the one-of-a-kind red hook keeps that bait moving in a way the fish can't resist. It's the Smile Blade Slow Death Rig. You're the destroyer. This is your depth charge. Only from Max Lure.
Want to go fishing and make money? You are in luck. This year's Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery kicks off May 1st. Just register at a check station and go fishing for 9-inch or longer northern pike minnow within designated waters of the Columbia or Snake River. Then you bring your fish back and collect a voucher good for a cash reward. The more fish you catch, the more they're worth. $5, $6, and $8 per fish. Catch a pike minnow with a special tag and you've landed $500. Find out more at pikeminnow.org. That's pikeminnow.org.
The road is calling you to experience one of Oregon's seven wonders that will allow us. So grab your camping equipment and fishing gear and head out to Northeast Oregon, where you'll find the views are endless, the air crisp and clean, and the waters cold and clear. Set up camp by the shores of Wallawa Lake or in the heart of the Wallawa-Whitman National Forest. Take your fishing gear and cast your bait into the deep waters of Wallawa Lake or roll your fly into one of the eddies of the many freestone creeks and rivers teeming with fish. This summer, take the road that leads to wonders. It begins at WallawaCountyChamber.com.
You're back with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz, and it's time to catch up with what's going on in the great state of Idaho, because I'll tell you what, they've been generating a lot of outdoors news there in the last few weeks. So we've got Roger Phillips on the line. He's with the Public Affairs Office at Idaho Fish and Game to kind of catch us up. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, John. Good to be here.
So we can't cover everything, but we'll at least cover three stories this week. And I think we'll start off with a record northern pike that was caught and released in Idaho this winter. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's our relatively new now catch and release program. And a guy pulled a 44-inch northern pike out of the ice, which is, I think, a really impressive feat in itself.
Yes.
You know, getting something that big through a hole in the ice. But yeah, and then he turned around and, you know, measured it like he's supposed to, and then took a picture and then turned around and let it go, which qualifies him for our catch and release records. And that was a 44-incher. And like I say, this relatively new program, our catch and keep, if you will, record is pretty old, but it's a 51.5-inch fish. So there's still some room there for folks, you know, if they catch those big pike and decide they want to let it go. And that's part of the fun of the catch and release program. It's fairly new. So some of our weight records have been around for decades, and a lot of these are getting broken on a fairly regular basis. So, okay, when you go fishing in Idaho, keep your tape measure with you. And if you get a big one, make sure you measure it and see how it stacks up.
I think it's a fantastic program. As a matter of fact, is Idaho the only state that's doing a catch and release state record program for fish?
I don't believe so, but I couldn't tell you who else is. But it's an idea that, you know, our guys kind of decided that they wanted to adopt, and our fisheries guys ran with it, and it's been really popular.
Well, I am confident in saying you're definitely the only state in the Northwest that's doing this. So, folks, if you want to go after a record, head to Idaho and bring that measuring tape and look for the species of your choice and go ahead and see if you can set a catch and release record this spring or summer. Let's turn our attention to pronghorn. There's a little bit of a problem down there with a pronghorn herd in southwest Idaho.
Yeah, that's a really unique one. I mean, I've lived, you know, in this area for quite a while. I can't remember anything quite like this. And the Snake River froze over this winter, which is pretty darn rare. And it froze over so solid that a bunch of Oregon pronghorn decided they'd like to immigrate to Idaho. So they did. And then they decided it was really comfortable living right there in Payette, kind of down around the homes and little small acreages and stuff like that. So now the river's thawed, so they can't really go back home. And so they're just kind of hanging out there, and they, you know, for hopefully it seemed to be doing okay there. We lost some, I should say, earlier this winter, which was pretty tragic. Lost about 50 of them that got into some of that Japanese yew, which is very toxic. But the remainder of them are just kind of hanging out there, and we'd like them to go a little farther east to where, you know, we've got nice sagebrush and everything else that pronghorn like. But at the same time, they just seem to be kind of comfortable where they are, and they're not really bothering anybody. But at the same time, they're not in an ideal location because it's kind of in a rural area, but still where there's a lot of houses and a lot of people.
So specifically, this herd of pronghorn is near the town of Payette. And I understand there's been some folks that have been asking Idaho Fish and Game to trap these animals and relocate them, but that is an issue. There's a pretty high mortality rate when it comes to those operations, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is, especially with those pronghorn. Our state veterinarian explained to us that, you know, we typically can see about, you know, 25% mortality when you try and trap and transfer, you know, those animals. And so that's, I won't say it's a last resort, but we're going to kind of avoid doing that, especially here right after a hard winter. You know, we might see that mortality even go up higher because these things are in a pretty weak state. But, you know, it's definitely a wait and see approach, and then make the decisions when they really have to be made. But as long as there isn't any, you know, major problems at the moment, we're going to kind of sit back and watch them and let them get a little bit stronger, and maybe they can find a better place to live.
Let's talk about these Japanese yew plants for a moment, because not only were a bunch of pronghorn killed after eating those this year, I understand a bunch of elk were as well. The Japanese yew, I wasn't even familiar with this until I read about it in your press releases. It's apparently a fairly common ornamental plant in your area.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's a combination of things. Obviously, we had a really hard winter, which drove animals down lower. And yeah, it's, and I almost hate to admit this, I was home working with a landscaper the other day, and she said, oh, we need to do something with that Japanese yew. And my jaw just kind of dropped. I'm like, oh my God, I'm part of the problem.
You're an awful person, Roger.
I know. And we don't have any animals, you know, hanging out in our neighborhood. But at the same time, you know, that thing's gone this spring. There's just no question about it, because it's not just lethal to, you know, to wildlife. It's, you know, lethal to dogs too. A dog can chew on a stick and die from it. So, you know, that one, we put out a pretty good release on some plants that are good substitutes for it. And, you know, it's voluntary. There's no laws mostly in this state, but boy, we sure hope people will take a serious look, especially if they're in an area where wildlife might come onto their property.
In wake of what's happened this winter, is there any consideration being given to basically a public relations campaign, maybe running some public service announcements and urging folks to replace these plants with plants that are less harmful to wildlife?
Yeah, and we've been kind of doing that, and some other folks are too. And like I say, it's a voluntary thing, but I think it's an education thing. And we've been, you know, we've gotten some really positive results. One of the managers of our local Costco just said, we're taking every one of them off our shelves and we're taking them to the landfill, you know, end of story. And I mean, that was pretty darn impressive, because I'm sure that they had, you know, a fair amount of money wrapped up in those. And our landscapers have been, you know, they've been real good about educating people. And, you know, I really do think right now it's an education issue. People don't, you know, like myself, you know, I knew that there was a problem, but I didn't know I had one in my yard. So, you know, if people want to go out and really inventory their property and get pictures of these things and find out what they are, and then find out what a good replacement for them is, it's really a pretty easy and inexpensive way to, you know, potentially save a lot of wildlife.
I agree completely. And folks, wherever you're listening here in the Northwest, if you've got Japanese yew in your yard, get rid of it. Do the wildlife a favor. You're listening to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. We're talking to Roger Phillips with Idaho Fish and Game, who's giving us a roundup on several stories that have been percolating out of the Gem State. Last one I want to talk about is something that just cropped up. You've had to move a whole bunch of sockeye salmon because they were in danger of dying due to heavy rains.
Well, yeah, not quite in danger of dying, but at the same time, we not something that we wanted to risk. We've got the Boise River flowing at the highest flows it's ever flowed for this time of year. That hatchery is in a fairly, you know, low elevation area where there was the potential there that river could jump the bank and flood the hatchery area, and we just decided we're not going to take that chance. We got a brand new hatchery over in Springfield that was, I guess it's a couple years old now, but at the same time, it's specifically for sockeye, and we just decided, let's not take a chance. Let's get them over there, keep them safe, and then when the river goes down, then we'll think about bringing them back. So definitely a precautionary measure, and one that we didn't mind doing.
Well, kudos to you, Roger. Kudos to Idaho Fish and Game. This situation has actually cropped up twice recently. It happened last year in Montana up near Giant Springs State Park, where the Missouri River crested into the hatchery, and they had to get rid of a whole bunch of trout due to concerns about whirling disease. And it just happened in Washington State and Central Washington's Chelan Hatchery. Heavy rains caused debris to plug an intake, and they lost a whole bunch of trout up there. So again, kudos to your agency for looking forward and taking precautionary measures. We're starting to run out of time. We're not even getting to another issue, which is the poaching of a bull elk near Rexburg. We'll save that for another time, or we would actually urge people to go to your website to find out more. What is the website so folks can keep up on the press releases that you and your staff are generating?
It is idfg.com. idaho.gov. And yeah, we do our best to keep that thing, several things on there every week and sometimes daily. And so, yeah, if people want to just put that on their bookmarks and kind of check it out periodically, it's not going to look the same every time they look at it.
Well, you and your staff are doing a great job. Keep it up. Keep educating all of us with what's going on in Idaho. And we'll talk to you again soon, Roger.
All right. Thanks for having me, John. Always good to talk to you.
Leupold Gold Ring Optics are built to perform at the highest level, shot after shot, year after year. Our rifle scopes, binoculars, spotting scopes, rangefinders, and more always come through when you need them most. That's why our American-built products have a lifetime guarantee. Or as we like to say here at Leupold, they are guaranteed for a lifetime of performance, not a lifetime of replacement. Find out more about our top quality gear and our lifetime guarantee at Leupold.com. Leupold, America's optics authority.
If you're looking for a great opportunity to catch salmon, halibut, lingcod, red snapper off of Vancouver Island, you've got to head to Port Hardy this summer. The place to go, Chad's Coastwide Sports Fishing. Find out more at coastwidesportsfishing.com. That's coastwidesportsfishing.com for an incredible fishing adventure.
Next up on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we're heading to the Cowboy State. That's right, Wyoming. We're talking to Tom Christensen. He is the Sage Grouse Program Coordinator for Wyoming Game and Fish. And this, folks, is the time of year if you want to see something really cool to go see sage grouse. Tom, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, John. Great to be here.
So sage grouse, I've only seen one in my life. That was in eastern Oregon. I was immediately taken with how big these grouse are compared to the other grouse species I'm familiar with. Tell our listeners a little bit about the sage grouse and their distribution across Wyoming and across the inland Northwest.
Well, you are observant to note their size because they are the largest species of grouse in North America. Really, wild turkeys are the only larger game bird out there on the landscape in North America. They are well named because they are totally reliant on sagebrush as their habitat. In the winter, sagebrush is essentially 100% of their diet, and they have a gut system that's uniquely adapted for that. But even during the rest of the year, they just have to have those sagebrush habitat. And in large blocks, they're a landscape species. They're not like a pheasant that can live out its entire life on a square mile of good farm habitat. Sage grouse have to have hundreds of square miles of habitat to exist.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. I am aware, though, that the sage grouse has been having some real issues, primarily due to habitat loss. You can find them in some places in eastern Washington still and eastern Oregon. They're a little bit more prolific in Montana. And it looks like Wyoming and Idaho both have decent populations. Idaho even has a very limited hunting season for them. What about Wyoming?
Yeah, we have hunting season for sage grouse in Wyoming, and I think we probably harvest more sage grouse in any other state, and that's because we have more sage grouse in any other state. We have about 37-38% of the range-wide population, and sage grouse, range from the western Dakotas to, as you mentioned, eastern Washington, Oregon, California, and then southern edge of Saskatchewan and Alberta, down in, well, into Nevada, Utah, and Colorado.
Now, this is the time of year that folks are getting out there to watch sage grouse, not for hunting purposes, but for wildlife viewing purposes, because the mating rituals are going on, and a lot of people are going to something called a lek. What the heck is a lek?
Well, a lek is kind of a communal breeding ground. There are species around the world that use this mating strategy where you've got a central gathering place where males come and put on a show in an attempt to attract females. Now, certainly not all species follow this strategy, but several of the grouse species around the world do.
Huh. Sounds like a meat market in a college town.
Yeah, I suppose that's a pretty good analogy. What is unfortunate for male sage grouse, which I guess is not too uncommon for other species as well, but a very small percentage of males actually do a very high proportion of the actual breeding. So there's one or two very popular guys at the center of a lek, and most of the guys get to dance and strut, but that's about all they get to do.
Yep, like I said, sounds like a college bar. So moving on, a lot of folks, like I said, they really get into photographing these male birds as they're doing these mating rituals and they're strutting around. How do people find these leks, I guess, first off? I know that Wyoming's actually got a program just for this purpose.
Well, yeah, it's because sage grouse are in need of enhanced conservation. You know, we recently were able to show that we've done enough conservation and plan enough conservation to keep them off the threatened and endangered species list. But certainly, you know, we're trying to be careful with their conservation and not disrupt these kind of activities and so forth. So while we want people to get out and enjoy the bird, you know, we're not just advertising where every one of these leks are. We have a program, as you mentioned, in Wyoming where we provide directions to about 15 of these sage grouse leks around the state that have pretty good road access to get there. And so by going on our website, and you can find where those leks are and download some maps and also some how-tos and other information about how to look at these birds each spring.
Well, and ethics comes into play when it comes to this, too, because you can cause some harm if you basically bust into the mating ritual. So we need to tell people how to enjoy the sight of these sage grouse in the spring, but at the same time, not disturb them. What are some tips you have for our listeners?
Well, to start, this is a very early morning activity. You need to be out on a lek before dawn. You know, about an hour before sunrise is a good time to be there. So you probably need to know where the lek is, you know, a day or two in advance.
Sure.
So you're not stumbling around out there in the dark. But getting there before the birds arrive, and then not going directly onto the lek. You know, most of these sites, well, I think all of the sites that we provide information about, you know, you can stay in your vehicle and view them with binoculars, spotting scope. You can be reasonably close, but, you know, we don't want people driving onto the lek or walking onto the lek. You know, the birds aren't going to tolerate that. They're pretty tolerant of vehicles, but not when there's right on top of them. So staying in the vehicle and avoiding loud noises and then not leaving if you're really close. You don't want to leave until the birds do. You know, if you're looking at them from a road or something, that's probably not a big deal, but especially if there's already traffic going by. But a lot of leks aren't really associated with very busy traffic because they're relying on the sounds that they make on the leks, so they don't want a lot of competition in that soundscape out there. They want, you know, a fairly remote place is the best for them. Of course, you don't want pets around, you know, dogs
right
out there. And then, of course, from a from the human side of things, you know, we don't want to trespass on private land and don't want to go out on muddy roads, you know, those kind of just good behavior to your fellow people out there as well.
Well, Tom, all great tips, all great advice on how to be a responsible bird watcher when it comes to visiting a lek and viewing some of the sage grouse that are out there this spring. Folks, if you want to find out more, just Google Wyoming Game and Fish. You'll get to the website in a hurry. Right on their front page right now is a link that you're going to get all sorts of information about grouse viewing and exactly what the heck a lek is. Tom, thanks for taking the time to tell us all about this on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
You bet, John. Thank you.
Leupold has been building optics in Oregon since 1907, and Leupold binoculars bring excellent optical performance and modern styling to the serious outdoorsman. Whether you're a boater, birder, backpacker, or hunter, Leupold's state-of-the-art binocular lines are sure to fit your needs. From the Poro Prism Yosemite series to the top-of-the-line McKinley Roof Prism, Leupold has a product that is perfect for the passions you pursue. Visit Leupold.com or your local Cabela's, Bi-Mart, or Sportsman's Warehouse to see the full line of Leupold optics.
A quality and affordable fishing adventure is waiting for you off Vancouver Island with Chad's Coastwide Sports Fishing. Located in Port Hardy, British Columbia, you can drive or fly to your all-inclusive guided fishing vacation. Whether you're after big salmon, heart-fighting halibut, or a cooler full of red snapper and ling cod, you can catch it all here. Better yet, your lodging, meals, and fish processing are all taken care of. Want one more reason to go? The price. With the Canadian dollar exchange rate where it is right now, your U.S. dollar goes further. Space is limited, so go to CoastwideSportsFishing.com to book your trip. That's Coastwide Sports Fishing.com for an incredible BC fishing adventure.
Oh, honey, it sure is a beautiful day to be out on the water.
It sure is. And you know what? I've got something special for you today.
You do?
Yep. It's a wedding ring. It's gold, it's pretty, and it hangs on and won't let go.
Oh my gosh, honey, I love you.
I love you too, babe. Here you go.
But that's a fishing lure.
Well, of course it is. It's a Max Wedding Ring Spinner. It's been catching trout, kokanee, walleye, and panfish since 1969. What did you think it was?
I thought it was a wedding ring.
Oh.
Max Wedding Ring Spinner. It's a great lure, but maybe they should have named it something else. Look for it wherever you buy sporting goods.
You jerk!
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has the quality gear you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff will help you find the right products so you get the most out of your time in the field or on the water. In addition to stocking superior clothing and outdoor equipment, we offer in-store events and seminars so you can enjoy a successful adventure. With over 70 stores located in the United States, it's easy to find a Sportsman's Warehouse store near you. Find out more at sportsmanswarehouse.com.
We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
Let's run through some upcoming events together taking place at Sportsman's Warehouse stores around the Northwest. The first one for you Saturday listeners is today. It's taking place at the Sportsman's Warehouse in Lewiston. It's Turkey Day from 9 a.m. until 8 p.m. Lewiston's own Gary Sherman is going to bring 30 years of turkey hunting experience to cover a range of topics that will assist you in a successful turkey hunt this spring. The fun lasts all day, and it's also going to include a kids turkey calling contest that kicks off at noon. This is for kids 12 years and under, and prizes will be awarded for first, second, and third place. Next Saturday, April 15th from 2 to 3 p.m., be at the Sportsman's Warehouse store in Klamath Falls. That's where you're going to learn about water purification for the outdoors. It's a big deal. You don't want to get Giardia because you will be a sick puppy and it's guaranteed to ruin your backcountry trip. So, learn about the new water filters on the market, and the staff there will guide you through the selection process so you can choose the right filter for your needs. Also next Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Spokane store on North Division is a Coastal Conservation Association Spring Chinook Salmon Seminar. Troy Black with Blackie's Guide Service will be sharing all sorts of information to help you get a springer in the boat or on the bank between now and June. This is a free class. Just go to the customer service counter to sign up for it. Want to find out about more events coming up at Sportsman's Warehouse stores? Simply go to their website, sportsmanswarehouse.com. Go to the far left bottom portion of that front page and look for store events. Click on there and look for the events at a store near you. And now it's time for your trivia question of the week. We just told you about sage grouse, but this week we're going to ask if you know what species is the most widely distributed grouse in North America. In size, it's one of the smaller members of the grouse family, and this brown-colored bird is commonly found in forests. Hunters love to go after them in the late summer and early fall, and some folks are so enamored with these birds that they even named a society after this species of grouse. Do you know the name of the grouse we're talking about here? If you do, go to our Facebook page at Northwestern Outdoors Radio, look for the post, like our page, and then give us your answer there. Or you can go to our website at northwesternoutdoors.com. Simply go to our Contact Us page and give us your answer there. Either way, we'll pick one lucky person who guesses right at the end of the weekend, and they'll win a $25 gift card. All you have to do is tell us, what species of grouse are we talking about that even has a society named after it? While you're on the web, be sure to tune in to WRVO Radio. It's an internet station dedicated to outdoors programming. It carries this show and our sister show, America Outdoors Radio. It also carries 30-plus other shows that relate to the outdoors throughout North America. The website, RenoViolaOutdoors.com. Another way to listen to our shows, besides on our Facebook pages and website and on RenoViolaOutdoors.com, is on your mobile app. That's right. We upload now to Podbean. So just go to Google Play, look for Podbean, and subscribe to America Outdoors Radio. You'll get to hear both of our shows, this one and America Outdoors Radio. That's Podbean. Look for it on Google Play and download it to your mobile app. We've got to wrap things up for another week, but the sun has been shining as of late, and that means lots of opportunities. Again, like we mentioned at the top of the hour, for spring hiking, spring fishing, folks are getting their bicycles out, and don't forget spring turkey hunting season. Until next time, take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.